This means that Donald Trump will be the 45th president of the United States.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome to the 45th. This week, Robbie here. I'm here with Susan. It's me and Susan again. Hey, Susan, how you doing?
Hey, it's just too bad we're not together this time.
You know, that was great. It was just so smooth and easy.
And fun and much, much less awkward.
Much less weird. And it was literally the only time we have ever recorded a podcast together in like 4 years, ever.
So you should move to D.C. because I'm not moving out of the district and then we can be.
I have to make a lot more money to like be able to take like my 3 kids and my 2 cats and I need like a yard and one day maybe I can afford it. But also, no, I like the country. So anyway, okay. So it's been an eventful, not just week, it's been an eventful few days.
Hours.
Lots happened. Yeah, hours. Exactly. And I know we're putting this episode out a little bit late, but we wanted to do it like that so that we could get in some really juicy stuff from today's Barr hearing with William Barr, the Attorney General. But before we get right into all the Mueller, Barr, Rosenstein shit show that has been taking place, I just didn't want to let this pass because it was so crazy. And that's a rally that not just one thing, I mean, a million things. I mean, right now, apparently there was a report that came out last week that Trump, in his presidency, has surpassed 10,000 lies. So congratulations, wow. President Trump. That's quite an achievement, yeah. Now, one of the lies that he has pushed over and over again, and it's like kind of transforming every time he presents it, is the lie that progressives and liberals and Democrats want to kill babies and about late-term abortions. And in the past, he said things that are so crazy. Like he said things like, they wait up until like the moment of birth and then decide to abort the baby. No, that's a birth. That's giving birth. You're not aborting a baby at like, you know, 40 weeks. Well, this past Saturday at a rally in Green Bay, Wisconsin, he changed it again. So let's listen to this.
But your Democrat governor here in Wisconsin shockingly stated that he will veto legislation that protects Wisconsin babies born alive. The baby is born. The mother meets with the doctor. They take care of the baby. They wrap the baby beautifully. And then the doctor and the mother determine whether or not they will execute the baby. I don't think so. Incredible. No, it's incredible. Until this crazy man in Virginia said it, nobody even thought of that, right? Did anyone even think of that? You hear late term. But this is where the baby is actually born. It came out. It's there. It's wrapped. And that's it. Who believes it? So to protect innocent life, I called on Congress to immediately pass legislation prohibiting the extreme late term abortion of babies.
Susan, have you heard this, by the way?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So why is this so problematic? And what in the actual F is happening? Because I refuse to believe that he actually thinks this is true.
No, of course he doesn't.
Medical professionals are horrified. Women's advocates are horrified. Women are horrified. It doesn't happen. This is not a thing that happens. There was an interesting article in Slate about this, and that kind of, you know, it's a theory they're floating. But the theory is that this type of propaganda, and it's an outright lie, is Trump tapping into like this very long-standing tactic of the murdered babies to incite violence against different groups of people. This was very common with the blood libel stuff and, like, you know, 150 years ago, because these were used as allegations against Jews, you know, to fuel pogroms. I mean, for centuries, really, that, you know, the Jews murder children, you know, drain their blood. Oh, yeah, there's been a number of shootings, too, by the way. So last week's synagogue shooting, the guy who, of course, he has a manifesto, the guy who perpetrated it, also mentioned a 2-year-old child who lived in 1475, who they say was murdered by Jews. But apparently it's come up again and again against Irish Catholics, against just different groups that's used like that. It's so weird to think that, I mean, like, I don't know if that's really like what he's tapping into, but is he really just trying to say like Democrats are baby killers?
So I suspect the origins of this particular like phrasing he was using is a hyperbolic version of the governor of Virginia's statement about babies that received terminal care. He did echo some of that language, but the purpose of that, of course, is to inflame and exaggerate and to accuse Democrats and anyone who opposes him of killing babies.
How can anybody who's ever had a child in this country think that this is a thing?
They don't.
I don't get it.
It's not good faith. It's this is beyond any possibility of good faith. They know that's not how it happens. They know some people will believe them. So that's the point of it. And those who know it's a lie will dismiss it as just an exaggeration that covers an underlying truth or something like that.
You know who'll believe it? Somebody who is totally off their fucking rocker will
believe
it.
And get a gun and shoot someone. Yeah, that's
exactly
the terrifying
and
part.
That's right. And that's the person who's going to do exactly the kinds of things that have been happening in the last few days. Well, this actually kind of reminds me of, did you read Comey's op-ed today?
I did. And I am not a Comey defender.
Right.
I normally think that anything Comey says is unnecessary and unhelpful. And like it's always like something happens and Comey weighs in with some like.
And you're like, you already broke it. Just go away.
Some like ambiguous tweet with a picture of him like staring off into the woods. And it's like, really, Comey, this time I think what he wrote was important and was good because he came from experience. He accepted his own. Like he acknowledged that he was talking. And the article is about what happens in the age of Trump. Why do these officials become complicit in what's going on? And he can speak from personal experience.
It's a great article, by the way.
And as he acknowledges, people are complicated and the underlying reasons are complicated. But the process itself is very simple, scarily simple. It's definitely worth a read. And there is some self-awareness in there. And I wonder.
There is. Oh, he says he totally gets kind of how this happens. He says, well, you know, what happens? He's like, you know, how can somebody with like somebody who's as well-respected as somebody like William Barr, who people thought, okay, this
no
guy
one,
is.
He was not that well. Come on. But yeah, I guess point taken.
I mean,
but yeah.
He wasn't taken. A complete. Right.
He was always
right.
A
exactly. Right. I mean, so but somebody like him, like how are all these people like suddenly. Like, how are they aligning with Trump and what's happening here? And he said that, I thought this was an interesting line. He said, people like Trump expose the weakness in others, in fact. So there are some people who have so much integrity, like let's say Mattis, which, I mean, that's also debatable because he agreed to work for him. But
relatively, yes. I will agree that.
Relatively, right. Yes, right. But others, he said, will sit in a room, and he did the same thing when Trump is saying these grandiose lies, like, you know, his inauguration crowd, and Comey was in the room when he's saying that. And the complicity comes through the silence. Nobody challenges him. Nobody says anything. So what does that mean? You all must agree with me. And that grows and grows. And eventually, you know, people, like he said, and then there's these situations in which you're kind of stuck or screwed, like these cabinet meetings where all these cameras and everybody has to sit around and say how great the president is. Mattis was the one person who wouldn't do that. He would talk about how great the service members are. But you know how like it's this little slide, and then his last line is great.
He says that they tell themselves, you tell yourself that you are there to fight against the corruption around you, or you are there to stand up to Trump, you are there
right.
to oppose it
as a patriot, right?
Without realizing that you are now complicit until it's too late. And I wonder if the question's there: what would Comey have done if he hadn't been fired? He kind of leaves the question open because he acknowledges where he was exactly falling into this trap, where he was complicit. And if he'd stayed there longer.
I think the people who go into this thinking, well, somebody like Comey, right? I mean, he has a career in law enforcement. He's a professional. He's not somebody like, let's say, Jared Kushner has no experience in anything he's actually tasked to do and just jumped in because of this administration. I think career professionals are like, I've had integrity my entire career. I can maintain it. Like they do and they should. Expect that they would maintain their integrity, but they've also never been challenged like this. They just haven't been challenged like this.
And that you can't, there's no way to be part of a system that's this fundamentally corrupt without playing along with corruption. It just doesn't work. Right. There's not an option to stay forever. Right. Eventually, you can maybe drag it out like Mattis did, but at some point, either you are complicit and part of it or you're gone.
Right. Right. Because the minute you do push back in any meaningful way, I mean, I will say this though, because I had a lot of friends working in government. That's very few of them are left working in government since Trump took office. But there are lots of people who are not going to be like in Comey's position.
Yeah, no, it doesn't apply to like career staff necessarily. It can.
Right, exactly.
It can, but does not necessarily.
Yeah, yeah. And those people, I think it's important for them to stay. It's important for them to be holding down the ship until this all this is over.
But at the same time, if they are placed in the position, if their role is one that puts them into conflict with fundamental norms that they have to sacrifice, I think the same applies. But most civil servants are not going to face this kind of question.
Are not going to be in that position. Yeah, hopefully. All right. Okay. So moving on. So I have been traveling a lot for the last couple of months, doing a lot of things related to the HBO documentary. And I'll be honest, I have not been taking very good care of myself. Listeners know that I've been doing, like, you know, the good stuff, the clean eating, the workouts, and taking my vitamins, my ritual vitamins, pretty consistently. And I did great for 6 months. Last couple months, I fell off the bandwagon. And you know what, Susan? I feel it.
There were the churros, Rabia.
It was the churros. Oh, you were with me when I got those churros, weren't you? God dang it. But here's the thing. It's also the fact that, yeah, I actually feel it. I feel the effects of, like, not taking my ritual vitamins, like, consistently for, like, a couple of months. But I'm kind of back on it now from earlier this week.
I have actually been taking ritual consistently, which I've never taken a vitamin before, because it's easy, it's good for me, and I don't have to worry about what I'm eating, so I can eat all the churros just fine.
Yeah, you can eat all, these were amazing churros, they were kind of worth it. But having said that, it is not worth not taking the ritual. I mean, the thing is, and the truth is, I actually traveled with it, but, you know, it's just crazy when you're traveling, it's hard to manage your day like you do when you're at home. But I'm so glad to be on it, back on my ritual. I feel better this week, I've been back in the gym every single day, and you know what? It really does make a difference. And I'm also at, and I don't know if it's an age thing, Susan, you're so much younger than me, but I kind of remember my 20s and 30s being a time of not feeling the impacts of living badly.
No, that's the 20s. So the 30s, that's over.
It's the 20s. So I don't remember. But yeah, in the last 5-6 years, I really do feel it. If I don't get a good night's sleep, I feel it. If I don't eat well, I feel it. If I don't take my vitamins, I feel it. But what I love about ritual, and I've said this so many times, is the fact that it's just two. You just take two a day. It's not a whole drawer full of vitamins. I cannot deal with that. I don't have the time or energy. And to be honest, whenever I've had a drawer full of vitamins, I don't take any of them.
So better health doesn't happen overnight. And right now, Ritual is offering our listeners 10% off during your first 3 months. Fill in the gaps in your diet with Essential for Women, a small step that helps support a healthy foundation for your body. Visit ritual.com/45th to start your ritual today. That's 10% off during your first 3 months at ritual.com/45th.
Take your ritual.
Well, speaking of complicity, let's talk about Rosenstein.
Okay, yeah, let's talk about him.
So Rosenstein has announced, as of the 29th, his resignation effective in like a week and a half. He has, in his words, landed the plane. And that's a phrase he apparently used when he told Barr when he came in how I could end this. It's the same phrase that Barr used in his hearing on April 9th.
I take back everything nice I ever said about him. He's an asshole.
He's not. No. So Rosenstein is an interesting figure in that he has played the exact same role from day one. He has been the most consistent figure in this entire story. And in some ways, it's the least, I was going to say least morally gray character, although it might be a bad choice of words, because he's just so, he is what he is. Like Comey said, he's a survivor, and it's more than that. I mean, just imagine the number of times now. Think of the number of times in the past 2 years where Rosenstein has been there to calm a tense political situation, get thrown under the bus, and then just get up and agree with whoever threw him under the bus.
Right, that's true.
Like that is his existence.
He's volunteered as that, yeah.
There has never been a bus he has not been okay being thrown under. And then he bounces right back up, no offense taken, and good to go. And it's not like, he is a Republican, he's conservative, and he's part of, I mean, that's his background. But it's not even necessarily a left-right thing with him, because it's just whoever is in power over him, he does their bidding, not necessarily literally, but keeps them, like, complacent. Bends where he's needed, always bends, as far back as he needs to keep on going, and then sees the mission to the end. The problem is his mission is extremely inconsistent and is not fixed. It's like his role has just been to usher through the Mueller investigation after he started it.
What I'm surprised about is the fact that he's resigning. I mean, unless he sees something coming down the road that's going to be really bad, like, why would he leave after putting up with, like, the most difficult part of, maybe, the most difficult part of this administration?
Because he can end saying he came in and did a job and it's over now. This is a good time for him to leave unless he wants to stay, like, forever. And people in that role often don't. But this is a good time. It's a good exit. Like, he came in when shit started going weird with Trump in the very, very, very early days of 2017. He is the one who was like, well, to survive this after writing the stupid Comey letter, I'm going to have to appoint special counsel. He did that. Then he defended special counsel. And now he is here defending his new boss, now that Sessions is gone, the attorney general. I don't think he bowed to Whitaker. I can't remember an incident of that. Maybe he has even Rosenstein has his boundaries. Like, the one person who could not throw him under a bus is Matt Whitaker.
Where is he right now?
Where'd
he go? Who knows? Okay. I did not read the letter. Anything more of interest in that letter?
Well, the letter he wrote was, it was written in Trump voice. And now remember, you have Trump who is, just months ago, has accused Rosenstein of like treason, of staging a coup against him, all kinds of stuff. And yet in his letter, he just praises Trump's like commitment to the rule of law.
What? What?
Yeah. That's
what a shitty way to go out. Really?
Well, that's exactly how Rosenstein would have gone out. But like as if he, this the past 2 years didn't happen, as if Trump's accusations weren't damaging the rule of law themselves, as if he was not personally the target of it on many occasions. I mean, his goal was to not get fired by tweets, so he won that one.
Here's the thing, though. This has happened before where somebody announced their resignation and Trump's like, nope, I fire you beforehand. You can't even wait out that long.
I mean, Rosenstein won. He did. By his definition of winning. But
at
guess what the
cost exactly?
Guess what the last two words of his letter were?
Uh-oh. What?
America first.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that's definitely. I mean, it was definitely crafted to be a sycophant to Trump.
I guess the question is now why? Why? Because now it doesn't matter. He's leaving. Trump's not going to be his boss and why is he kissing Trump's butt now?
Because he's an appeaser and a survivor. And he's done both those things.
But he survived. He's going to move on, maybe in private life, maybe become a consultant, go into private practice, whatever. He'll be fine.
So don't burn any bridges. That's he can go anywhere now.
I get that. You can burn. Okay. I feel like he burned some bridges with that language. Well, he could have left without being that disgustingly, brown nosing. I mean, he could have left with some dignity and grace, and I think he would have burned less bridges and still not been denigrating to Trump, but not done that. America first.
Oh, even
or
better.
Maybe he's just a racist. I don't know.
So keep in mind that he also included this in his letter. It's a resignation letter, so it's submitted to Trump, who appointed him. As I submit my resignation to you, I am grateful to you for the opportunity to serve, for the courtesy and humor you often display in our personal conversations.
Okay. I'm just disgusted by the whole thing.
Rosenstein may not be totally done with government yet because he's definitely in need of having his asshole before some kind of congressional Senate committee.
I was
going to
say, speaking of which, I just saw a report came out tonight, just about 10 minutes ago, that Barr is not going to show up tomorrow's hearings.
What?
Yep. Barr is refusing to show for tomorrow's House Judiciary hearings, and the DOJ also has said that it will not comply with the committee's subpoena for Mueller's full report.
So here's the background to everything going on right now with Rosenstein and Barr and Mueller. Trump has now been freed of his chains of pretending to adhere to, separation of powers and rule of law and checks and balances. He is staging a war on every front against every attempt at congressional oversight. He is ordering all his people to refuse to show up to hearings. He is he's suing his bank to force them to not comply or try to make them not comply with the congressional subpoena for his records with Deutsche Bank. Like he said in his own words, we'll fight all the subpoenas, and he is. Now, this means that effectively the president is immune from everything except theoretically re-election because he cannot be indicted. He has an attorney general that will prevent investigations into him. There's no one who can accuse him of committing a crime other than who? House Democrats who can't do shit in the end. They should definitely impeach him, especially given his resistance to all kinds of any sort of oversight, but they can't effectively remove him, which means.
And can we impeach Barr while we're doing this too, please?
God. Which means in the United States, as of this moment, there is no rule of law for the president.
Yeah.
To an extreme degree.
It's amazing that how he managed to orchestrate this.
He just corrupted everyone around him until this was inevitable.
I mean, yeah, but that's what I'm saying.
It doesn't require a plan. It just requires slowly grasping each lever of power and making everyone around you complicit in your grasping for power until there's no one left to stand up against you.
Do we want to talk about Mueller's letter that we just learned about a couple days ago before we get to the hearings.
Yes.
And of course, this was brought up at the hearings today. But let's talk about what happened here.
So Barr was appointed for a reason, and he's fulfilling that reason. And that's to investigations into Trump in the Mueller investigation and president. One question has been how far he'll go in that mission. And how far he'll lie, how much he'll misrepresent. He'll do a ton of spinning, endless spinning, ton of maneuvering, like, for gain. But there's kind of been, at least, especially initially, there was a resistance to any belief that he would actually outright lie. When he issued his letter, the media was willing to accept that as fact. The summary letter. And without questioning too deeply, like, obviously, everyone knows he's spinning it to some degree, but that he would not be lying in his actual claims. Then for 3 weeks, he delayed the release of the actual Mueller report. He finally does. By then, it is too late. The fact that Mueller absolutely did not clear Trump of obstruction, in fact, specifically found that he could not, that if Trump was innocent, he would say that, but he cannot say that, hint, hint, that's now forgotten. The whole narrative is like, oh, he couldn't find sufficient evidence to bring an obstruction charge, when it is very clear that Mueller would have indicted Trump had he not been president. And there's, in light of the Mueller letter, there's several reasons to not question. It's just very clear that what Barr said wasn't even just spin. It was factually incorrect in several places. Like his claim that for each point of the 10 possible obstruction acts, there was evidence on both sides. Nope. For some of those, several of them, there was only evidence on one side. Also the claim that Mueller left the decision to Barr. Nope. Absolutely did not happen in any universe. Those are just lies. The Attorney General is not just spinning. He is actually lying and maintaining those lies. Now, people were also thinking, well, if Barr was lying, why didn't Mueller speak up? And that's because Mueller,
right?
As someone put it on Twitter, I forget the username, I apologize. Mueller is the Ned Stark to Barr's Littlefinger.
Oh, God.
Yeah. It's not an unfair analogy because Ned Stark over here is playing the game the way he's always played it. And Toto, we're not in Kansas anymore.
Okay. So it turns out
that Mueller did speak up, just privately, quietly, many times.
Right. Mueller wrote a letter the day after this. The summary was produced publicly and Barr gave that little presser. He wrote him a letter and he's like, excuse me.
So let's back up for a bit. For non-attorneys and non-prosecutors, this may not seem like such a big deal. OK, so he wrote a letter and it's, in the non-legal context, a very restrained, calm letter, does not accuse Barr of lying, does not accuse Barr of deliberate wrongdoing. So for non-attorneys, the significance of this may be overlooked. This is a big fucking deal. This is not just like a letter. This is like a formal high-level complaint. This doesn't happen. In fact, at the hearing today that Barr did decide to show up for, he was asked to name another occasion where something like this happened, and he couldn't name one. Instead, he quibbled with the way the question was phrased, which is like, Mueller, career prosecutor, did this. What do you think of that? And he's like, well, Mueller's not a career prosecutor because he headed the FBI for 19 years, whatever. So, again, Barr could not think of a single occasion when this is done. This is like just below the nuclear option for someone like Mueller is to write this letter.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so last week, Robbie and I were traveling, and I don't want to get into details of it. I'm still too mortified, but there was definitely an incident where I had a wardrobe malfunction due to my bra.
Oh, I remember this.
It was horrible. I'll remember it forever. Like, 20 years from now, I'm going to wake up at 3 a.m. and recall that and want to die.
Let's just say it was a very important meeting, and there was a bra strap
showing. It was awful. I don't want to talk about it. I can't talk about it. I'm not ready yet. Too emotionally raw. So afterwards, Robbie's like, wait, is that what your third love bra? I'm like, no. No, it was not.
This is true. This conversation happened.
The sucker that I am, if I had actually worn third love bra,
it wouldn't happen.
I would not.
It wouldn't
now
happen.
Be dying every night at 2 a.m. when I recall this event.
See, every time you don't wear a third love bra, you are risking bra failure. You're risking bra failure.
Third love bras fit right. That's the whole point of them. So don't be like Susan. Get a third love bra.
Third love bras are hands down the most comfortable bra you own. They're going to fit great because they have the amazing fit finder quiz. They also have like 78 sizes and cups that come in half cup sizes. I don't know any other brand that does that. The straps do not slip. They just don't, Susan. And there's tagless labels. So I have this weird thing, I swear to God, and this has developed in the last year or so. If I ever wear a bra that has a tag, it starts itching me. And my husband, I'm always like, can you reach? Because I can never reach that spot. But I don't have that issue with third love bras. So I try to stick to my third love bras. And of course, they have lightweight, super thin memory foam with these lovely cups. And, it makes your shape all nice and pretty. And they are proprietary. Only Third Love has those. So, look, Third Love knows it's a perfect bra for everybody. Right now, they're offering our listeners 15% off for your first order. So go to thirdlove.com/45th to find your perfect fitting bra and get 15% off your first purchase. That's thirdlove.com/45th for 15% off today and no slipping straps.
Yeah, I'm not kidding. The wrong bra can ruin your life. So don't let it happen to you. Go to Third Love.
It's a short letter. It starts out by saying, you know, I previously gave you an executive summary of, you know, each volume of his report with marked with redactions. And then he's kind of talking about a couple of the things that he's like, sentences that can be released publicly. And then he says, accordingly, the enclosed documents, like the ones he's sending now, are in a form that can be released to the public consistent with legal requirements. I'm requesting you provide these materials to Congress and authorize their public release this time. That is him clearly recognizing and pointing out that he knows that Barr is going to, like, suppress shit. And that's what Barr did. It's like, this letter never made the light of day. It just, somebody must have leaked it to the press a couple of days. I think New York Times broke it or Washington
no,
Post.
No, so the letter was actually leaked by, not leaked, the letter was released by DOJ today. People have been talking, obviously. And, I mean, it's clear people who have talked to people on special counsel's office, or were in special counsel, have mentioned, I heard from so-and-so that they're upset about what happened. So slowly that this has been getting out. Yeah, at least in early April, even, there were rumors about this, something like this having happened. That's why it came up in the earlier questioning of Barr on the Hill. But what this letter does is show that this is actually one of many communications Mueller had with Barr about it. And it shows that Mueller did think.
But we have no record of the other ones because we don't have the notes. Yeah.
But basically, this means that Mueller thought that Barr was undermining the central purpose of special counsel's investigation, as he put it.
I mean, listen to this sentence. The summary letter the department sent to Congress and released to the public late in the afternoon of March 24th did not fully capture the context, nature, and substance of this office's work and conclusions. He's saying your summary didn't at all reflect, like, you know, the conclusions in our report. But when Barr was asked about this today, my jaw dropped because he said, well, I called Mueller after I saw this letter and I said, what's going on? And Mueller said, no, I had no problem with your summary. It's just how the media is understanding it and how the media is, like, incorrectly portraying to the public. And so there should be maybe more information give to the public about why I didn't reach an obstruction.
The media's not mentioned it at all in this letter.
Right. It's not mentioned at all. But also, this is another jab. I mean, this is part and parcel of the attack on the media that, you know what I mean? Like, he's kind of adding to that fuel that Trump is always fanning the flames of, that fire. So he's clearly saying it's your summary. It's your summary that didn't capture any of, like, what I was trying to get across.
Yeah. Barr's performance today was remarkable for many reasons, but one of them was his ineffective and just ham-fisted way of dealing with this call from Mueller. At one time, he tries to portray it as like, oh, Mueller wasn't really that concerned. He just, like, was, you know, didn't like how the media was portraying stuff. And then towards the very end, last like 5-10 minutes is when he really started to slip. And he was asked about the
call. I missed
that. He asked, that's about the call from Mueller. Or he called Mueller. I can't remember where it went. And he said, this is Barr testifying. I said, Bob, what are you doing writing a letter like that? Showing that Barr is very much aware of how serious this letter is. He knows that this is a big deal and that Mueller took the steps to preserve this means that he thought it was a big issue and that Barr does something wrong. And this matters for a lot of reasons, but to get back to what happened at the April 9th hearing for Congress, here is what Barr said at the time when he was asked by Representative Crist about these early reports that special counsel's office was not impressed with how Barr was handling it.
Reports have emerged recently, General, that members of the special counsel's team are frustrated at some level with the limited information included in your March 24th letter, that it does not adequately or accurately necessarily portray the report's findings. Do you know what they're referencing with that?
No, I don't.
Yeah, so we now know that when Barr said this, he had spoken to Mueller, who had told him that me and my team, are very concerned with how you are portraying our investigation and our report in your letter. So his attempts to spin why what he said before was not perjury were interesting. They included an attempt to say, well, the question was about members of the special counsel's team, and I didn't know which members of the team were referenced, so how could I know if they have concerns?
Oh,
is Mueller a member of his own team? Maybe he's not. And then he also claimed that when he was asked that question, the only concerns he had, the only concerns he was aware of, and the only problems he knew the Mueller team had, was that he did not give full information or enough information about the report to give the full context. Well, that's exactly what the question asked. The question didn't ask about other concerns. He's trying to say, like, oh, Mueller didn't say I wrote anything inaccurate or that I wrote it wrong. But the question was about Barr portraying the report incorrectly, misleadingly, through lack of information about what was in it, which is exactly the concern that Mueller raised in this call with him. So basically, Barr literally lied and has no way of spinning his way out of it, but nothing's going to happen to him because that's how he rolls now.
Well, he lies to cover up the lies, and there's just nothing can be done. I thought it was interesting, the portion of the testimony that I saw, he kept referencing Rosenstein, whatever, Rod. He kept referencing him over and that the deputy attorney general and I, the deputy attorney general. And I was thinking, is he setting him up for the bus? Like, is that what's happening here?
Like, that was like five bus throws in a row today. Like, that's how they roll. Like, and every time Rosenstein just pops back up, he's like, okay, may I have another, sir? So, yeah, he is the human shield. That is his job. He is the human jello cup shield. Just shoot at him. It doesn't matter. He just kind of wiggles him around. He's fine.
What a spineless individual.
You know, and like it's because of that spinelessness that Mueller was probably allowed to complete the investigation. Like without, like if anyone but Rosenstein, we probably would not have been able to even get through the Mueller investigation.
I guess that's the upside.
I mean,
one part I also heard was that, and I don't know, remember the greater context of it because I had a day from hell, but I was trying to watch some of the hearings. When it was the exchange with Lindsey Graham, or if it was Graham that said it, or if it was Barr that said it. But he said that it's been proven that the allegations against Trump are false.
No. Well, obviously that's not true.
I mean, but he actually clearly said that. And I was like, wait, what did I just hear? But I did write it down when I heard it, so I know it happened. I didn't make that up. So he testified all day today, and I guess he was supposed to come back tomorrow, but it's not happening. I mean, now what? Now what?
Well, at the end of the hearing, the head of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Lindsey Graham, was saying that he would write to Mueller and invite him to write about anything he disagreed with about what Barr had said, but that he was not calling him in to testify and, quote, it is over. So that's the Senate. It's Republican controlled and it is over there. But, you know, luckily there's one small shred of hope for humanity, or at least America, and that's that the Democrats took back the House. And apparently they are planning to bring Mueller in very shortly. The next few weeks anyway, to testify about. Now, here's a question. Will Mueller be Ned Stark and just be like, won't answer questions that he doesn't think he should answer as a prosecutor, as someone who cannot make a conclusion about whether Trump committed a crime? Or is he going to answer honestly and fully? Because it's very clear, like there's no question in my mind. Mueller concluded that Trump obstructed justice. Everything on his report shows that he believes that firmly and that he did everything but writing that final conclusory sentence that said that.
I think he's going to do both. He's going to answer honestly and fully to the extent that he can.
So here's the thing. The whole reason this is all happening is because the special counsel rules don't provide a way for the investigator, special counsel, to make a referral to Congress for impeachment. And that under Office of Legal Counsel, current opinion, they can't actually charge the president, which means there's nothing they can do about the president. So,
and this is current DOJ policy, right? This is not like something that's existed.
So if Mueller sticks to that, he can't say that much because in theory, there's a good point to the purpose of his non-determination, which is that someone who can't defend himself in court shouldn't be accused of a crime. If he sticks to that policy, he will not say what he believes and what he clearly has communicated in an indirect fashion, not even indirect, in an all but complete fashion in his report.
Well, there's some lawyers also, I think, on the House Judiciary. Maybe they can get him to just answer some yes and no questions, and that might be like answer yes and no. I mean, that might be the way to get
Mueller's got to be pissed off now. Maybe he'll get more chatty with that. But here's the other problem with it's not just the. So what Barr did at the Senate testimony today was terrifying because he made it clear the current position of the DOJ is that the president is immune to criminal investigations, immune to criminal process, and cannot commit obstruction of justice. so long as he can claim that he believed what he was doing was not to obstruct justice, but to protect his reputation. And if the president believes investigation into him is not factually founded, he can terminate it at will. That, those are his, I'm not exaggerating here, that's actually what he testified to. Like, at one point, that without even being asked about it, he voluntarily came forward and said, if the president, because the president was wrongfully accused, he can terminate this at will. Which means there is no investigation into Trump that is safe. It means Trump is free to obstruct. He's free not to comply with congressional subpoenas. He's free to tell everyone in his office or anyone he's done business not with to not to comply. He is free to disregard the law. That's where we are. This is not an exaggeration. This is literally where we've gotten to now. There's nothing that can be done about him. And he can
That's
do whatever the fuck he wants.
It is breathtaking. Yeah.
Why would he possibly comply with oversight right now?
Right. Oh, weren't you wearing Stitch Fix clothes last week?
I was.
You were wearing Stitch Fix clothes in LA with me. Tell us all about it, Susan. You look really cute.
I did not wear my super cute red heels because they're a little bit too cute. but we're talking about Stitch Fix because Rabia has definitely made room in her wardrobe to expand some really cute things. So she needs to get on it and get some more Stitch Fix boxes. But I was trying to sell her on some recent stuff I'd gotten. And I was like, actually, this shirt and this skirt. Yeah, all that actually came from Stitch Fix. I had not realized how much of my outfit had
She was like a walking Stitch Fix billboard, and I was like, this is amazing. And it should be, because, you know, Stitch Fix is an online personal styling service. They style you. They deliver your favorite clothing, shoes, accessories directly to your door. They've got all kinds of great brands, and they have exclusive styles that you don't find anywhere else.
Yeah, and, like, I appreciate good fashion. I appreciate clothes that look good, and that being an attorney in court, you know, that's important to me. I also just, like, don't have a lot of brain room to worry about it necessarily. Like, I care about it. I just don't. Yeah. This is why Stitch Fix is amazing for me, because they do all the worrying part and all, like, the stressful parts for me. And I get the benefit of cute clothes and cute styles that feel like I was unique and put together myself, but really I didn't.
Well, Susan, I have been a fashion disaster my whole life, so that's why I need things like Stitch Fix. By the way, there's no subscription required, which is awesome. You can pick between automatic shipments, get new pieces just on demand. The $20 styling fee is automatically applied towards anything you keep, because you can decide, I want these things, I don't want these things, and it's not a problem. You can discover new styles and find unique pieces with Stitch Fix. So get started today at stitchfix.com/45th and get an extra 25% off when you keep everything in your box. That's pretty cool. That's stitchfix.com/45th. Why would any person who is trying to protect themselves from being, you know, investigated or prosecuted for something, be okay with that? I mean, like, anybody would take that opportunity to terminate something that they think, I mean, unless that person's like, I'm here to confess and I did everything that you're accusing me of, which, like, never happens. It's just a complete free pass. And he's saying that this office has that power. What I wonder is, do they not ever see a scenario in which there could be a Democratic president that abuses this type of, like, you know, this what's happening right now? Are they not thinking that far? Do they not care? I don't understand.
They know it won't play out the same way. They know it's not going to be a problem for them. You could see it more with the executive order thing. When Trump was in the emergency powers declaration, that they are more concerned about it being used by a Democratic president. And they express that concern. They know that this is never going to happen with a Democratic president. They know that this whole abandonment of the rule of law won't be something a Democratic president is able to do. But they are going to circle the wagons around Trump and let him break the law at whim, because he has, to be fair, why should he comply with it? He personally has flouted it. He's won. And now as attorney general, that's okay with him flouting it. So there's just the only lever we have left is House investigations, and those are crippled. So, yeah.
By the way, did you catch the news that Barr's son got a job in Trump's legal team?
Yeah.
A couple months ago?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Nepotism runs deep.
All right. So depressing. Just gets worse and worse. How is this? If Barr says, I will not comply with the House subpoena, is it a subpoena or summons, or what is it? Or is this a request?
I don't know. I think this was different. He was not as a cabinet member. This was not a subpoenaed appearance. I can't imagine. I think we've heard about that. There's no way it was. So that's different. They can subpoena him now that he's not cooperating. And then if he refuses it, they can hold him in contempt. That's the option they can for other people who are refusing as well. So here's the thing. There is one more. In the short term, there's no longer a check on Trump. there is a long-term check in the form of the courts. The problem is that given the speeds that courts work at, it's not going to get resolved in time to matter. Right. He can drag this out possibly until the election, if not beyond it. So his rule of law flouting would eventually come to be challenged. He would lose in lower courts, lose in the appellate courts. Coin toss, how it'd go at Supreme Court. But he could lose there, theoretically. The problem is that we just wouldn't know in time. So, like, he can get away with this for 2 years.
At the end of 2 years, though, if he's not reelected, then there might be, I mean, he's no longer sitting president.
He gets indicted.
Then he gets indicted, right? So
look at the SDNY investigation that's on hold. The only reason they're on hold there is because they can't indict their target. As soon as they can indict their target, they're not going to be on hold.
There you go. A couple of the exchanges that are remarkable from the hearing that I keep seeing being shared on social media was the one with Kamala Harris and Barr, and where she asks him about just a very simple, straightforward question. Has Trump ever asked you to open an investigation into anybody? Have he ever suggested the open? And Barr is like,
stammer, 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 stammer. And Kamala Harris is like, I will ask you again. He's like, stammer, 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 stammer. And she's like, so you don't know? I don't know.
He's like asked me, suggested, inferred, asked, ordered.
Know.
Like, and he's just like, I can't, maybe there was I mean.
That's a yes. That's a yes.
That's
the
a yes.
The president has instructed or requested or suggested or done what Cohen says. He, you know, in his Trumpian way says, I hope you're going to look at investigating so-and-so. I hope you're going to do this. That's absolutely happened. Like rule of law is ever more figment. Like it's been on a slow sizzle for a little while now, but we have definitely reached an escalation point where it's not just little lapses. It's not just like tiny oversteps. It is full on not going to obey the law.
God, who's going to save us? But did you catch the exchange about the word spying? That came up.
Spying's not a bad thing. I don't use the word pejoratively.
Okay. So what can you give us a context of that? Because I didn't actually catch it. I just keep seeing it on social media and I didn't see what it was about.
So on the April 9th hearing before Congress, Barr was asked about the investigation in 2016 for the election. And he says, I think that the Obama administration was spying on Trump, which is just red meat thrown out to Trump in the base to try and make everyone think, oh, wow, look at this. Trump was right about accusing Obama of having his wires tapped. So they asked him again. It was White House, I believe, who circled back and was like, so what did you mean by that? He's like, spying's not bad. I was with the CIA for a while. I think spying's great. I didn't mean anything bad by it. And just denying that he actually like had implied anything was amiss or that there could have been any sort of the improperness about what was going on, when obviously that's exactly what he implied, what everyone understood it to be. So that was the whole deal. I mean, Barr is just openly behind Trump's like disregard of law. He is fully in the corner. He was asked at one point, literally, like, so they said, okay, you can't criminally charge him. And now he won't comply with investigate. So that if you can't criminally charge the president, the implication should be that that's because there's other methods of holding him accountable, other methods of having checks and balances. But if the president's not complying with subpoenas or investigations, how can he be held accountable? And Barr just answered, well, other presidents have been held accountable. That's not an answer. That's saying that the only check on the president's power is his ability to be reelected.
Well, they don't wait a minute. They don't wait a minute to try to make a dime off of every opportunity they can. They've already started sending out emails and newsletters saying, you know, official stand with Attorney General Barr petition. Like there's an actual petition to stand with Attorney General that's being sent around by the Trump 2020 campaign, also asking for, of course, money. They are just despicable. I also saw today that this has nothing to do with what we've been talking about, but that we might be going to war sometime soon.
With who? Wait, Venezuela?
Venezuela, yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's a whole disaster we haven't even gotten into yet.
That's exactly right, that we might be sending troops to Venezuela.
Okay.
Which, you know, could be a distraction. It could happen without anybody paying much attention because there's so much other stuff is on fire. But I thought I would mention that. Anything else that we want to talk about?
Oh, God. The Venezuela failure there is definitely worth discussion, but it sounds like we'll have Well, I hope we don't, but I'll have more occasion to talk about it next week. In short, basically, Trump administration, and by Trump, I mean like Bolton and Pompeo, gambled on an attempt to oust him from power, the Venezuelan president yesterday. It failed. They blame Russia for that failure, which is interesting. But now the question is, what next? That the, you know, uprising, staged uprising doesn't seem to have worked. So more overt interference by the U.S. military would be a possible, if ill-advised, next step.
Speaking of Russia, he was asked by Lindsey Graham, Barr was asked today by Lindsey Graham, did Russia enter? I thought that was interesting that Graham wanted to do that, to make it very clear that at least on the Russia issue, Barr believes there should be like some level of diligence to prevent Russia from interfering again. And Russia did definitely interfere and all that stuff. I thought that was interesting.
But notice he never said that Russia was interfering to help Trump.
There is that. There is that. All right. You got anything else, Susan? Or are we good for today?
Man, this is the ongoing 2-year-long constitutional crisis.
Have we landed the plane? Has it crashed? Fizzling. What's happened?
I mean, if your goal is to make Trump immune from any kind of check on his power, well, that plane may have landed. I mean, from here, there's no place to go but the courts, and the courts cannot save us in time. So I do not know what happens from here. And I'm very worried to see what happens next. Because, okay, here's, like, Trump, this isn't just about the Russian investigation. This is about any investigation into him. And it's also about how he's running the country. He also is now free from oversight into how the country is, what he's doing. Like, imagine if...
There are no more checks and balances. I mean, it's been... Yeah.
Imagine if Zinke and, what's his face, the EPA director, how can I have forgotten his name already?
Scott Pruitt.
Yes. If those doofuses were still in power, they could hang on now. Mm-hmm. We're past the point where their corruption can be checked because they no longer have to appear and answer questions about what was happening. That's why they were forced out, because there were too many people who knew too much about what they'd done, and there'd be too many hearings. Well, now there's not going to be hearings, so we're cool.
Well, let's see. I'm sure Trump is going to sleep well tonight. You know, his little monkey performed well. All right. So we'll be back in a week, and let's see. Hopefully we don't send our military anywhere, including the southern border. And I guess that's it. By the way, be safe. There's apparently measles outbreaks all over the country. That's just, I feel like we're like in some kind of post-apocalyptic movie or a pre-apocalyptic movie, excuse me. There's just such crazy shit happening everywhere.
On that happy note, see you next week.
On that happy note, don't get measles. All right, bye guys. See you in a week. All right. A big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan, and you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is @45thpod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.